First of all, I want to start by thanking Jim and Greg for taking the stool with me this morning for today's message. Now, Greg, you have been the bearer of messages in the past here on more than one Sunday morning, so most folks are accustomed to seeing you up front here with either a microphone in your hand or at least a guitar strapped over your shoulder, leading worship, preaching kind of thing. And Jim, now as an engineer, you may not know this about Jim, but Jim has an engineering background. He may tell you more about that. But as we moved into this building and we had all this sound and audio and video technology, Jim has been invaluable in helping us kind of problem solve and troubleshoot issues as they come up. So you've maybe seen Jim up in the booth there running around. And together, if you come on any Ruby's Pantry, those two are up here with what? Banjo, guitar, harmonica, singing, playing, maybe not singing, but playing, and creating this awesome offering of music for our guests on a Saturday morning. Today, though, as father and son duo, you are up here in a brand new role to share a very personal and very powerful love story. Now, I want to talk just a bit about last week. Last week, Brian, raise your hand there. Brian was up here sharing the message, and he shared this really beautiful, beautiful story, love story, where he wove a story of family love in with a story of God's love from the Gospel of John. What we're about to hear today is, and we're going to quickly discover, I think it fits like a glove with what Brian was sharing last week, what we heard last Sunday morning. Jim and Greg, you are two people of very genuine faith, two people whose faith is central to your lives, and two people for whom I have just immense respect. So first of all, just thank you so much on behalf of Living Water for being up here and sharing your story with us. Now the question is, with any of these things, where to start? So where do you want to begin?
I'm going to begin with a letter that I wrote to the doctor kind of at the start of Diane's illness, and it just sets the scene for us. So it's a letter. It was written December 13th, 2013. Whoops, wait a minute, that's the wrong one, Jim. Here we go. October 21st. Update on Diane Adams, birthday 10/7/1941, sent to the children. The dementia is progressing at what seems to be a rather rapid rate. Here are some things that are happening. There is confusion about where we are living. For Mom, we are being threatened by someone, unknown, who is trying to take our house from us. Sometimes we live down south, like Alabama. Sometimes she doesn't know where we are and wonders how they got everything in the house and made it just like ours looks now. There is daily concern about, quote, the kids, unquote, and wondering where they are. I think she believes you're in high school yet. She regularly asks where Greg or Don or Chris is and often sees you and here in the house, we're leaving the house to go somewhere. Today, October 18th, 2013, we were baking pies, and she asked if she had seen her dad. She realized before I could answer that he had passed away years ago. She also asked if everyone knew about our separation and getting a divorce. I told her that was never going to happen, but I don't really know if she believes me. Mom asked me if I talked to the ghosts. She said she sometimes sees them, but doesn't understand why I can't see them. She regularly sees people in our house and wants to know what happened to them and where they went. Yesterday, she wondered where the kids were and why they never came back to the house. Mom made the statement, don't I count anymore? That breaks my heart. She wonders how long a trip it is to the church and how long it will take to get back. We're 2 blocks away. I don't think she could at this point handle making a pie or a cake on her own. It takes a long time, like minutes, to try to figure out what should be done next. I chopped a bunch of carrots for soup yesterday. When I got ready to put them in the soup, I discovered she had scraped them into the garbage. Also, there are always things misplaced and lost, regularly, particularly parts like the blender. Mom knows there is a problem with her thought process, but can't understand what is causing all this. Wish we could all answer that one. So I'm thinking it might be a good idea if each of you could call Mom on a regular basis on her cell phone, even if it's only a minute, just to let her know she counts and that you are all okay. I think we'll also try to have some short visits. We'll come down for an hour just to let her see where you are and that things are fine. We'll have to work this out with everyone. It's good for her to talk to others. Signed, Jim Adams.
Jim, you just described, you know, some of what you were seeing, experiencing with Lewy body dementia. What exactly is it? What is Lewy body, and how does it happen?
I'm going to skip ahead here. Lewy body is a disease that causes brain malfunction, literally. There's the last count I read was about 1.4 million people in our country that have this disease, often misdiagnosed as Alzheimer's disease, and it is associated with Parkinson's disease. Now, that doesn't mean that if someone has Parkinson's, they're going to have Lewy body dementia, but about 50% or so of the patients with Parkinson's will at some time possibly get Lewy body dementia. It's caused by a protein that grows inside the neurons, and the neurons, of course, is what are networked in our brain, billions of them, and they interrupt the operation of the synapses. That's the little tiny things in our brain that causes communication between individual neurons, very tiny stuff. And this protein interferes with that and will eventually kill a neuron so that there is no communication between certain places in the brain where this is occurring. It affects all areas of the brain. It affects the information process, the cerebral cortex, how we process information, how we perceive and see things, the limbic cortex, where our emotions and behavior come from, the hippocampus, where new memories are made, midbrain, where the movements occur, and the brainstem, where sleep is regulated and occurs, and also in recognizing smells. It's like Alzheimer's in that there's a loss of recent memory, there's language problems, there's math problems, logic problems, abstract thinking problems, depression, anxieties, personal behavior, and disorientation. But it's different in major ways. And Lewy body dementia will cause an unpredictable cognitive ability. It's just things happen and behavior happens which you have absolutely no clue as to how in the world it ever got there. There's a lack of attention and alertness, changes in movement. There's visual hallucinations, many of them. REM, sleep disorder, remember it's any part of the brain that this can affect. So sleep disorders, rapid eye movement disorders, delusions and paranoia are high, a lot of delusions and paranoia. And there are changes in the autonomic, thank you, functions like just breathing or blinking our eyes or swallowing, for example, those functions.
Mm-hmm. Jim, question I have before we go on to symptoms some more is at this point, as you realized, excuse me, this was happening to Diane, what were your conversations with God like? I mean, because you are both, and to Jim and to Greg both, you're both people of prayer people that the process everything through your faith. What kinds of things were you saying to God at this point?
Well, I can remember a lot of things. And the conversation is constant with something like this, and should be all the time. But I can remember being afraid for Diane, of asking for wisdom and asking for guidance, and how do I help Diane? How do our family come together through this disease? And just praying constantly for help, all the time for help.
Yeah, Greg. Yeah.
My prayers a lot were of asking for comfort and strength for our family, especially for Dad, dealing with this. I think as it progressed, I remember a Bible study conversation we had about people praying for miracles. And sometimes the best miracle is the ending of the suffering.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to ever wish for or pray for, but I remember praying, God, please grant the healing that Mom needs.
Yeah.
And if that's ultimately to take her back,
yeah,
that's what it needs to be.
God, you make the best decision here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I know what I need.
Mostly strength and comfort were the big requests.
Okay. In the meantime, you're dealing, I see some symptoms up here. Did you want to mention that?
Diane experienced a lot of falls, loss of balance, periodic unconsciousness. I mean, just all of a sudden go unconscious. And then a few seconds later, maybe as much as 30 seconds, be back with us. Hallucinations were there, not just in visual, but also in the senses, like touch and in audio. And then she had a very difficult time seeing things and being confused, like pictures in the house and mirrors and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
Was a difficult thing for her.
Jim, when you were seeing all these symptoms, and Greg, did you have ever like important, tough, difficult, crucial conversations with Diane? I mean, what kinds of things were you telling her? How were you helping her process this?
Because we live a block away from each other, Mom would call a lot and say, when the Capgras syndrome, which is the seeing strangers in people that you love, not recognizing people that you love, she would call me up and say, I'm here alone with this man and he wants to play puzzles and I just don't feel comfortable with this strange man in my house. And so I'd say, all right, I'll be there, Mom. And I would walk the block up there and I would see Mom and Dad in the house. And she would be distraught and I could see Dad's, he's a pretty introspective, quiet guy, so I don't expect it to be all chattery, but I would see this stare in his eyes like, I don't even know what to do anymore. And so I would do my best to convince Mom he is a good guy. We want him here with you, and he's going to help you out. And
wow.
That was tough.
How many times did you have to have that conversation?
She would... couple times a week, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was that like for you?
It was disheartening because I didn't know if she always knew that I was me. You know, I'd be like, oh, I'm going to be the good son and come and save the day.
Yeah.
And it's like, I might be one of them. I might be the good cop, you know, so to speak. But it was, to see Dad in that situation and not know what to do was really difficult.
Yeah.
Really difficult.
Now, the time came eventually that Diane had to, you just couldn't have her at home anymore, and you made that decision, difficult decision to to take her to the memory care center.
Yes.
Can you lead it, walk us through what that was like?
Hard.
Yeah.
Really difficult. Maybe we should read that section on that.
Yeah. 133. Like you all have a book to look at here. Turn to page. Can you tell I'm an English teacher?
Greg did the editing on the book, by the way, which I'm forever grateful for, because my style of writing is strictly engineering and technical, and he made it sound like everyday language.
Yeah. So the book is broken down basically into about three different voices. One is Dad's actual journals that he did daily in the 2 years or so that we were dealing with this. The other one is the actual caregiver notes from the facility. And then the third voice is the reflective Dad looking back on it. So when I'm reading, I'll be reading either Dad's actual journal entries, and then Dad will do the reflective part. Saturday, March 1st, 2014. It's moving day for Diane, such an emotional roller coaster. I'm sad to think of her not being with me on a daily basis, yet glad for the care she will have at the Memory Care Center. I'm so happy she will be able to see Don, Chris, Greg, and her siblings more consistently. I'm internally crying in one instant and organizing the move in another, trying to think a few days, a few weeks ahead, then getting back to now before the cycle continues. We moved Diane into the Memory Care Center about 1 p.m. Greg and I got the large items moved in. Then after Mike and Chris came, we moved the baskets and boxes into Diane's room. Don and Heidi came, and the girls put everything in drawers. I'm just not sure Diane understands everything that's going on. Bless her heart for being such a mild-mannered person. I had a very teary drive home and a long cry when I got into bed. This is hard.
This was a night of deep grieving. I cried long and hard, literally crying myself to sleep. The past week had been so intense, getting Diane ready for the move, that I had no time to think or reflect. The last time I had some reflection time was the trip home from the memory care center after signing the admission papers, which was also a tearful time. I felt deep concern for Diane, not knowing what she was feeling, and was fearful for her first night in a strange place with strange people. There was guilt about putting her in the care center, and at the same time, grief at losing my lifelong partner. I feel angry at Lewy body dementia with Parkinson's disease. My mind is running wild with sad and angry emotions.
Yeah. Now, what were your conversations with God like?
Was, am I doing the right thing? You know, can I not feel guilty about this? Can I get through this? And can Diane get through this? And will she be all right? And that was one of the biggest things. Lord, help to make her all right with this.
Wow. Mine just continued to be strength and comfort and healing. Because I think when you're in that sort of... Well, maybe your brain works better than mine, Dad. that's all I could get out, you know. Uh-huh. Comfort, strength, healing, you know. Yeah.
Greg, you mentioned strength. Where did strength come from during this time? Where did the help come from?
Surprisingly, it came, for me, from humor. Mom would say it's about outlandishly crazy things. And, you know, it's tragic, but, like, you just can't let it get to you. And so humor would be a good thing. I would, when I visited, she was in Hallie, Lake Hallie Memory Center, and I teach in Chippewa Falls, so I could stop by any day after school, which was a blessing. You know, just to catch her, I remember one of the last times that I saw her outside her room. She was in a wheelchair because she had lost the ability to walk at that point, and she had a pen and a little slip of paper stuffed up her sleeve, and it was like she was in a spy movie. You know, she's like, I can't let them see this paper. And I'm like, it must be wild to be in my mom's brain right now. And she, like a nurse would walk by and she'd shove the paper up in her sleeve. And she, I'm like, you all right, Mom? Yeah, yeah, they just can't see this. I'm like, wow. Uh-huh. But the thing she said to me that sticks with me the most is when I was leaving that day, I'm like, Mom, are you going to be okay? And she looked up at me and she said, I'll be okay no matter what.
Whoa.
And that's one of the last coherent things I remember hearing her say to me.
It's like you heard your mom. All right, take a deep breath. losing the love of my life. This is the slide we have up here. As we wrap up our time here, could you say a little bit? There's kind of two areas I want to touch on quickly. One is the saying goodbye and how that went.
Yes.
Could you talk about that a bit?
Yes. The 25th of July, 2014, Diane passed away. And Greg and I were both present, and it was one of the most peaceful experiences I think I've ever had in my life. There was a relief, and it's a gentle, loving God relief that I'm talking about. You know, he's wrapped her around his arms and carried her home. Mm. And that there was no more pain. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to see any more pain. She didn't have to experience any more pain. My grief was constant since about December of 13, when I realized at that time that I had lost the love of my life to this disease called Lewy body. She no longer mm-hmm. recognized me, but sometimes it's three or four different people. Mm-hmm. And so it was in that sense, that this peaceful passing and a thanking to God for taking her in and bringing her home.
There's all this waiting for the last breath, really, and some people may not have wanted to be there. Oh, excuse me, but I was really hoping to be.
He was there at 8 o'clock in the morning when I came back from a walk, and it was exactly 8 o'clock in the morning when Diane took her last breath, mm-hmm. and it was just slow and even, and all of a sudden there was no more breath. And that's how peaceful it was. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad Greg was there with us.
Strangely wonderful, I guess, is the way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of breathing. Last question. The last slide, Diane wanted a happy funeral. Can you talk about the celebration of her life and what that was like?
Well, shortly after Diane passed away that afternoon, we got together and we knew that Mom wanted to have a happy funeral with music and friends and all. But yet we felt we had to honor the grieving process of everyone. And so we did. We had a traditional funeral. And then a few months later in October, we had a celebration of life for Diane. And we all got, our family plays a lot of instruments, and the kids play instruments. And we got together with our instruments and our little Limberjack dolls, and we had a great celebration. It was a wonderful day. And I think Diane would have loved it. I really do. I think she would have loved seeing all the people visiting with each other, relatives, friends, schoolmates, all there celebrating with her. And I loved it, and it was a super closure for me, and I think it was for the whole family. Greg?
Yeah. The whole happy funeral thing is like when somebody says, don't let him make you mad. Yeah, right? That's a hard thing to do. But the funeral itself was fine, but the celebration of life was fantastic. Except, I remember the humor thing again, forgive me. When we went to the cemetery to, you know, put mom's ashes there, they dug the hole in the wrong spot. So we're all walking over to the grave and like someone else is walking over here and we're like, it's over. But she's where she needs to be now.
All right.
We had opened Diane's parents, a gravesite beside her parents, and we were down the cemetery quite a ways, and I had to tell the couple there that was opening up the grave, we had to move down here, so we did.
Yeah. All right. We're at the close of our time. Jim, Diane, coming at me here. Jim, Greg, thank you so much for sharing your story. You'll be around in the back. Books, you have books, this book, available for those who wish to purchase it. And there we go.
Do you have time for one thing?
Sure.
I'm going to read from the epilogue. Sometimes it's hard to believe good things can happen from experiences like losing a loved one to a transformative disease like Lewy body dementia, but they do. Reflecting upon my encounter with this disease, one thing comes to mind, and that's gratitude. I was grateful for God's message of hope and love. Without constant prayer relationship with God, my mind would have exploded at times. Taking the hurts and concerns, fears and grief to Him, and knowing there was hope in the end, was refreshing relief to the constant stress of the day. I was grateful that God gave Diane and me 52 wonderful years together. Our love grew deeper as the years passed, and even more so during Diane's illness and the end of her life's journey. That deep love, strangely enough, lasts even after death. I was grateful for family, friends, and churches who made us both feel well loved. It's difficult to imagine what we would have done without the help and support of our children, brothers and sisters, close friends, visits by pastors, comforting us all along the way. I was thankful that the Capgras syndrome, and that's where Diane saw me as 3 or 4 or 6 sometimes different gyms. Capgras syndrome causing Diane to see me as other gyms seemed to disappear with limited visitation in the memory care center. Diane knew I was her gym during the entire stay. She also knew who each family member was, and words cannot express how much that meant. Thankful for our local Aging and Disability Resource Center for the tools and caregivers classes that I attended. Thankful to the memory care personnel and young staff that treated Diane with such great dignity. And finally, the hospice care associated with our Medicare system. That's the way healthcare should work. The care given to Diane during the last 6 months of her life was superb. Their follow-up and contact with me after Diane's death was greatly appreciated. And the hospice personnel were our medical advocates who cared very much for what was happening to us.
Amen.
Amen.
Thanks again.